You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Back for hour number three. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Feel free to visit rotoexperts.com for your exclusive edge package. Enter promo code FREERADIO for a discount. Tons of articles, player projections, cheat sheet generator for those of you that are drafting today, tomorrow, early this week. You know, baseball kind of isn't as tight as NFL when it comes to drafts. People are, George, I know you have a draft later this week.
I have the Mike Wars League. I don't even know what day that is yet. They haven't announced it, but I know we did put in our dates we could make it. It will be before next Sunday is all I know.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, good luck with that. And obviously for those of you that are drafting a little bit later, you can go into the Roto Experts exclusive edge package, find tons of articles and help in order to help you do that. And we're going to get into George's article, who's hot or who's not, in the next segment, go over some players as we head towards opening day, which is really technically in just about 4 hours, George. We're going to have some baseball that counts. So looking forward to that. From the Yankees, see if Tanaka and Archer can get off to good starts. Obviously, very valued pitchers this year in fantasy circles, correct?
Absolutely. Tanaka, I mean, there's no reason to be worried about that, the elbow anymore. We talked about him yesterday with Tony Sincotta. He's someone who it may have taken a year for him to realize, hey, I can let it loose. It's not going to tear. So I think he's figured that out. Now, he pitched very well last year. For a while, he was in the Cy Young conversation. Ended up being the wins there. I think he had an injury too. Missed a couple of starts. The wins didn't add up for him really to get there. But he's fine. Archer, he had a little bugaboo with the home run ball last year. But if you're looking for a dark horse for the Cy Young this year, I think it would be Archer. But I think he's also going to have the same problem. That offense is going to not allow him to probably get enough wins. I know it's not the maybe over the past 5 years, it's not the battle here it used to be. I think the voters have understand that there are other numbers that are more important than wins. But still, if you end the season 12-10. It's going to be tough to get that Cy Young Award win, and I do worry about that with Tampa, as I think they are the last-place finisher in the American League East.
George, we talk a lot about players that we like. We all have our favorites, right? It's no secret that even amongst fantasy experts, we can be as analytical as we want and follow rankings and follow our systems, but we're all going to have favorite players. You've mentioned a couple of guys all during this spring training that you really like, that you're a big fan of. I have to say, I'm a huge fan of Chris Archer, and I know he led the league in losses last year, and he struggled at times, but I just get the sense that he's a guy that can bounce back. Now, as you said, the wins may be kept down. He's never had more than 12 wins in a season, just to give you everybody a sense. In 2013, 9-7, 2014, 10-9, 2015, 12-13, and then last year, 9-19, and he obviously didn't pitch well at times. But I just love him for a bounce back this year. I just like his demeanor. I like the fact that obviously he can pile up strikeouts like nobody's business. So you're not going to struggle for the amount of times that he's pushed out there and the amount of number of people that he strikes out. But I just like Archer a lot. I'll probably draft him a little higher than some other people get. I'll make an effort to draft Chris Archer, certainly.
Yeah, it's hard not to like Archer in all facets of the game. The only negative I can point out is the fact that the team, not that great. You know, he could lose some W's because they can't score runs that day. You know, and today may be that day that Tanaka shuts down the offense. You know, would it shock anybody if the Yankees win this game 2-1? You know, expect today's Yankee game to be a pitcher's duel today. You know, I think the Yankees are going to hope Tanaka can go 6-7 innings, then hand it over to Betances and Chapman. It's exactly what the Yankees, that's their recipe for success here. So it wouldn't shock me at all. It also wouldn't shock me if Tanaka's the unlucky loser today. And the Yankees lose 2-1. You know, I think it's a low-scoring game today. Archer, I mean, he has everything you want. Live arm, good fastball, good slider, knows how to pitch. And, if you've seen him in the playoffs on Fox the past couple, whatever, ESPN, whatever he's been on, he has a future as a broadcaster afterwards also. He's a very, very intelligent young man.
Super smart. I've read a bunch of articles about him. He's like a very well-read guy. He's not your typical gym rat, I guess is the best way to put it. He's not that type of guy. I think he's really dedicated to his craft. But as you said, he steps outside the lines of baseball in an interesting manner. And I think he's got a great personality. I think you're right. He would probably line up for something like that afterwards. So anyway, just that my thoughts on Chris Archer there. As we continue to go through Tony's draft, he pitted the Seager brothers together. So in round four, he goes with Kyle Seager, who... you know, over the last several seasons, Seager's been a really reliable player, plays every day, sort of like his compadre, and maybe he's learned from him in some ways, in Robbie Cano. I mean, 155, 160, 159, 161, and 158 are his games played over the last five seasons. And last year, homers have crept up each and every year, George, and he's 29 years old now, coming off a 30 home run, 99 RBI, 859 OPS season, finished 12th in the MVP voting, but obviously putting up the numbers. This lineup got even better, we feel, with the addition of Segura. We talked a little bit about how Dyson would probably be at the end of the lineup now, probably hitting towards the bottom of the lineup, but he'll have Segura, Haniger in front of him, Cano, Cruz. The table's going to be set for Kyle Seager a lot this year. So your thoughts on his season?
Yeah, I like Kyle Seager. I think he's an underrated third baseman. I think we sort of forget about him. That lineup is going to mesh. It's just going to mesh. Yeah. He's a part of it. He'll bat fifth. He'll be batting behind Nelson Cruz, which I think is a good spot protecting Cruz there. Because teams are going to, you know, with Cano, Cruz, Seager, man, that's a lot of bats that can hit. You know, the team sort of have to pick their poison. You walk Cano or Cruz, you're going to put people on base for Seager, and he can hit too. He went to 30 home runs last year, sort of breaking into his own. He's gotten better and better each year. So, yes, I'm a big fan of Seager. Both Seagers.
And you know, this happens to us every year. It happens in football, happens in baseball, George. We talk about teams enough that we can our opinions kind of change. Our opinions change over the course of a spring where we are talking about a team enough and my opinion starts to sway a little bit. And I realize that why aren't people talking about Robbie Cano a lot, despite the fact that you and I do? Why aren't people talking about Robbie Cano? Why aren't people doubting Nelson Cruz? This has been the Gene Segura show, so we talk about Segura almost every week. And now we have Kyle Seager there, and he's sitting at the bottom of that group of players. The table's going to be set often. I think you're right. I think they're going to mash. I think the Mariners are better than some people expect. Clearly, they're going to have to get something out of the pitching staff, but this lineup's going to be legit, and I think there'll be a lot of runs to be scored. So I like that Tony's in on Kyle Seager to match him with the brother in Corey Seager. So I think we're going to have to take a moment here, George, because we have one of the greatest people I've ever met is on the phone. He's on the line to talk about his draft yesterday, which I feel was really a unique draft. I think he was crafty in the way that he did it. So I'd like to welcome onto the program Mike Cardano. Mike, how are you?
I'm sensing that the two of you are not happy with our team.
You know, it's not my favorite team that I've ever seen. I got to be honest. I think we're going to struggle a little bit.
Mike, how much drinking did you do during this draft?
I was going martinis. Most everybody else had coffee at 10:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Okay. That by the way, why did this draft take 6 hours?
Now, that had nothing to do with me. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. As a matter of fact, to be fair, I left at the end of the draft. I didn't complete my draft. Somebody completed for me. It got to be ridiculous, and I wasn't going to sit around for it anymore. But
seriously, why was it taking so long? 6 hours is nuts. I would have left.
People literally took sometimes 3-4 minutes to make a pick, and it was silly. But yeah. I don't know. Listen, 15 teams, 30 man rosters. It gets slim picking. I kind of went with the. You know, I know if you look at it as a whole, it looks like I have people who are starting out in the minor leagues and people who are. Questioned with injuries or maybe missing their the week of the season or stuff like that. But it's a long season, and I thought that the pickings were going to be so thin as it went on that I wanted to get stock up on what I thought was talent, which would help me over the course of the year. So it's not that I expected Johan Mancata to be an integral part of my team in the first half of the season. But when everybody was salivating over him in the second half of the season wanting to get him, and there's 15 tries to get him, I thought maybe I could stash him and try to get him, those types of things. you know, I am banking on the Harveys and things doing well, and I obviously wasn't focused on the outfield, but it is what it is. So you guys have some work to do to help me out here.
Yeah, so the cranky Harvey, the cranky Harvey combo is a tough one. I would, you know, I could see you taking a chance on one. I would have been more likely to take a chance on Harvey.
Well,
probably
let me just say
cranky.
Something.
Yeah.
Why is it that you assume Grinke had an awesome year 2 years ago? He had a very poor year last year. Why is it that you just assume that he's going to have a poor year? He's got an impeccable resume over his career after he battled whatever mental issues he's had. And he pitched much better in the second half than he did the first half. Why do you just assume that he can't be an ace again?
George, I'll let you handle that first.
I mean, he's not that far removed from it. And he had some health issues last year.
Well, when you talk about Zach Greinke, you talk about a couple of things here. The mental issues Mike was talking about was actually not a joke. He has issues with anxiety, which is why pitching in Boston and in New York would never happen for him, at least not on a full-time role. The problem with Greinke is twofold. One, no longer pitching in Chavez Ravine, Dodger Stadium. He went from one of the best pitchers' ballparks in the majors to maybe the best hitters' ballpark, or certainly one of them, and hasn't made that adjustment.
George, when he was pitching poorly in the beginning of season one, he had some health problems too. It didn't matter where he was pitching. He was just pitching poorly and for whatever the reason. It had nothing to do with the ballpark. He got pelted on the road.
And the next problem would be, if you put up health problems. Well, he's lost 3 miles an hour off his fastball this spring, Mike. Either he has health problems again, which means the same thing's going to happen, or he's just getting older. And that velocity is not coming back. If he's going to throw that fastball right down Broadway or right up in the zone, those numbers aren't going to get any better. He's someone we've been avoiding like the plague. There's something seems to be
wrong
here.
I get what you're saying. George, I do get what you're saying, but I can tell you firsthand from going through spring training myself that everybody's, particularly the pitchers, are not always completely up to stuff, and there are plenty of guys who are throwing at one velocity in spring training and in June are throwing at a different velocity. I've physically faced those people myself, and that doesn't necessarily concern me. If he turns out to be not healthy, it will be a poor pick. But if he turns out to be healthy, I think it'll work out fine.
Okay, might give you that too, but here's the third problem. You drafted him 64th overall. You could have got him 4 or 5 rounds later. You didn't have to take him where you took him.
You may be right. You may be right. I don't know. You know, I did reach for him. He was somebody that I was focused on that I did want to get. I think he's going to have a good year, but I can't argue that point.
All right, so I'll concede on Greinke. You took a shot with him. I do agree with George that we could have gotten him later, but as far as the opportunity for him to have a good season, yes, it's there. Am I certain that he's going to be bad? No, but the velocity, it's more than a red flag. It's almost a roadblock for me. Velocity, a guy is turning 33, I think he's going to be 33 this season. That really is a huge concern for me when guys start to lose velocity. We talked about Sabathia earlier in the show. Ultimately, it took him a couple of years to figure out exactly how to pitch like that. And could Greinke do that too? Of course. But I just don't know that you can expect him to be as dominant as he was, for example, in 2015 with the Dodgers when he was the best pitcher in baseball, effectively, along with Kershaw. So I get it. But
I'm not expecting that.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So what happened with the outfield? George and I talk very often where in a 15-team league, you need so many outfielders. We're talking 75 to 90 outfielders. You just avoided it until nearly double-digit rounds when Yasmani Tomas was your first outfielder.
Yeah, I was just looking at taking players without concern of their defensive position of where I thought I could get the stats from. It just worked out that way. I was very conscious of making sure that I filled positional needs. I picked catchers earlier than everybody else, catchers that I happen to like, to make sure that I had two catchers I thought that were going to end up doing pretty well, that it's going to be hard for people to have two catchers. And we talked about yesterday either having two catchers or not having any catchers, and I decided to go with that. I decided to go with the one reliever and two setup guys, and and try to get a little lucky with the saves with the setup guys, but concentrate on strikeouts and whip, helping my overall status there. And then if I can get some lucky and get some extra saves there, saves I always think you could find during the year. So I got those earlier than people would have reached for them. It was just kind of a different kind of strategy. I would have liked to get one more stolen base guy. I had one or two guys pegged that I would have bid on if it was an auction that got swiped before me. So I wasn't all that displeased when I left. There's some work to do, but I just think over the long haul, I think I grabbed quite a bit of talent, even the Kipnises of the world who people were avoiding like the plague, that to me, in the middle of the season, these guys are going to be flourishing, and people didn't take them because they were going to miss the first week or two of the season.
Well, you're talking about your one setup guy. You're talking about your one setup guy is Betances, and your closer is Chapman. So you're hoping to get lucky with the saves. Like, for me, it's
Miller
somewhat.
Too.
Yeah, I get Miller. Nobody's going to criticize you for taking Andrew Miller, but your setup guy trying to get lucky with the saves would be cannibalizing them from your closer.
You know, for Betances, Chapman has to go down in order to get saves. But he's going to, no doubt, help my whip and strikeout percentage. He's going to get some more strikeouts than some fifth starters in baseball.
I agree with you. Like, Betances on his own is fine.
Less. You know, and yes. A whip. But I just combine the two. I plan on probably activating all three of those guys. To start off,
so
the innings limit is very small, 900 innings limit. So I probably plan on activating all three of those guys to start, and I expected that to help my whip very much.
But you will admit that the starting outfield is Rajai Davis, Yasmani Tomas, and Aaron Judge. Yes.
I haven't looked. I'm driving. I don't know. The starting outfield, as names go, is weak. Agreed.
Okay. George, anything else you want to...
You know, I may be able to put some other people out there who are dual qualifiers over time.
We'll see, yeah.
Andrew,
Go ahead, George.
Go ahead.
When I look at Mike's team, it's, you know, there's not one player I would really pick apart here. It's the fact that you took so many chances. You took guys that other people were avoiding because they're going to miss the first couple of weeks of the season. There's nothing wrong with taking one or two of those guys, but you seem to take six or eight of them. And odds are they're not all
going to.
If they all pay off, you win. But the odds of all of them paying off, that's the problem here. I mean, you go by player. I love Julio Urias. But he's going to start the season in the minors. We don't know if and when he'll be called up. Should he be on the team on talent alone? Yes, but now he needs an injury. He needs Ryu or McCarthy or Wood to go down. Odds are one of them will, so he will get called up. So I don't have an issue with it, but you still need help there. Tyson Ross.
George, the reason he's not up is because of innings limit. They just want to give him they're just monitoring his innings. He's going to be an integral part
right.
of that team. Anybody who doesn't think so is crazy.
We think so, but if the other guys are pitching well, he's not going to overtake them. Dodgers don't need him to win that division. They'll do fine as it is. Listen, I love you. I drafted Urias in my home league, so I get it. I did the same thing. Tyson Ross, starting the season on a DL, and he's not going to do much with Texas anyway. We already discussed Zach and Harvey. I think I sort of protected you there. Pomeranz starting on a DL, but he'll make his opening start. Rodon is hurt. You know, you took Kipnis, who's banged up. Conforto, who only made the team because Lagares. Is banged up. He could be sent down in the second week in April, even though I think the Mets are nuts. I think Conforto maybe is the second best hitting outfielder on their team,
but I'm looking at it from a total season standpoint. I feel that
but
Conforto
you have so many guys
a
like this.
Part of the team. I agree.
You have so many guys. Prado, Gallo, Mancada. I mean, I can go on and on with guys you took big-time chances on. I have no problem with Miller and Betances, by the way. Although, you said it. You're going to have to look for saves during the season because right now you only have about 60. And that's not going to do you anything there. But I have no problem with Miller and Betances. They protect ratios. And that's what you want here. I think in a 15-team league, I actually think that's very important because I'd much rather have Miller and Betances than maybe some fourth starters, more or less fifth starters. I want to protect my ratios there, but you'll need to search for saves here. You do have a lot of work to do here, and you need a lot. If it all works out, I mean, I mentioned the 6 to 8 guys. If four of those guys work out for you, if Moncada does come up and is a star, if Urias does come up and he's a star, you'll certainly be in better shape. But you need a lot of wishful thinking here to happen, and then that's tough to rely on.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. I'd like to, Mike, if you could put this back on June 1st and revisit, and really, in order for this to work out for me, all those guys that I picked have to be integral parts of the team by that date. If they're integral parts much later than that, there's not enough time for it to work for me. So let's write that date down, and that's it. You guys got some work to do. So let's do it, boys.
I'm excited about the challenge. And one thing I know is that when you take lots of chances, they usually all work out, right? So I usually have no issues with that.
Mike, what's your favorite baseball team, Mike?
Yeah, you know what? I I'm just disenchanted. I would have to be the Mets, but I'm not as passionate about these things as I was when I was once younger. But here's the thing. You have permission to trade any of the Mets to Engel for anything you want. You know, Harvey, offer him anything. Anybody I got that's a Met, if he wants them, see what you can get. There was part strategy there. I managed to sit next to him during the draft, and I was trying to intimidate him a little bit, but I don't know if that worked. Maybe it might have went reverse. I'm not sure how that worked.
Well, we'll take a look at his team in the next segments. Mike, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Good luck this season. We'll help you out as much as we can in this league. So have a good Sunday. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Get to it, boys.
All right. So George and I will come back, talk a little bit about his Who's Hot or Who's Not article on rotoexperts.com. It's Mike and George until 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George talking a little bit about George's article that we released on rotoexperts.com just a couple of days ago. Who's hot and who's not? And George, is this something you do throughout the regular season as well?
Yes, during the regular season, on Tuesdays I'll have the closer report, and on Fridays we'll have the who's hot, who's not column.
Okay, we talked about a couple of the guys yesterday. Michael Brantley is somebody that we talked about, and you know, it's good news that he's starting out the season with the team. As I stated, look, we have no issues with the talent that Michael Brantley has. What I'm leery of is that Cleveland seems a little too excited about Brantley starting the season, insofar as they set a very low bar for how healthy they feel that he is at this point. He started 3 games in a row, and it's almost as if they set off fireworks and be like, hey, he can join the team. I just don't know if he can hold up. He's obviously had really significant shoulder injuries, and does that affect the power? Does that affect other parts of his play this season? So that's it on Michael Brantley. But Greg Bird, a guy that we're both really excited about, as you stated, I think properly, he has an opportunity to be a top 10 first baseman, and if you're worried about this being a platoon situation with Chris Carter, you said don't worry about it at all, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's what when the Yankees signed Carter, I thought it made sense. You know, Carter faces left-handers, Bird faces right-handers. It worked out perfectly. But then we've seen what Bird did in spring training. He was destroying everybody. You know, right now, Carter has no place. Yeah, so I'm not worried about that at all. That's not to say Carter won't play against Chris Sale. You know, certainly, Chris Sale's pitching. Yeah, I'm going to bet. You know, Bird's not going to play 162 games. He needs a day off every now and then. Against tough left-handers, it would make sense to sit him. That's what I want him to sit if I'm a Bird owner. I don't need to take an over 4, you know, against Sale. Sit him down against guys like that. You know, if David Price, if when he comes back, maybe he can't sit against both guys. But against tough left-handers, that's when I expect to see Chris Carter to play.
Right. And, yeah, good stuff there. Obviously, as a Yankees fan, as Yankees fans, are pretty excited. Could be looking at 30 homers. By the way, I heard somebody talking yesterday on another program. What would you set the over? Let me say it this way. What do you think would be a really good home run total for the Judge, Bird, Sanchez trio?
All three.
Yeah.
How about 78? I'll take the over under of 78.
So if we set the
over under, that gives an average of 26 each.
If we set the over-under at 78, you expect them to go over?
Well, I expect them to hit 78.
You expect them to hit exactly 78. That's the number you picked. All right.
That's why
you said the over. You said over under. So I thought.
I think I think Judge is more the wild card here. If he's up with the team all season, he could hit 40. He could hit half that number all by himself.
Yeah.
You know, but then again,
he's the one most likely to lose his job. Right. He's the most likely to lose at bats, lose his job. Sanchez is the least likely if we're ranking the three. But Bird, obviously, is a guy that we have expectations for. I wonder if we're getting a little too high on him, but he's played his tail off this spring. So there's no reason to be anything other than optimistic. I think 78 is a pretty good number. You know, you want it to be more than 75. You're certainly hoping for. I think if 75 happens, you can be happy. And if it gets up towards the 90 range, you're thrilled. That's it on Greg Bird. Brandon Drury, Arizona Diamondbacks. He hit 16 homers in his first full season last year. And that just may be the start of the kind of damage he can do. You're saying you're not sure if he's a 30 home run guy, but he might have expectations just shy of that.
Yeah, he's somebody who's definitely coming up my draft board. Second base is a loaded position, and he's one of them. If I could, you know, if I stay with Altuve, Cano, and all these top second basemen, and I wait way past the Kinslers, you know, I'll take Drury late in my draft. I think he's going to hit 25 bombs. What's a great ballpark to hit in. He's sort of an unknown player, and he's not a big name. So he's somebody I am I think tonight I'll be targeting him in both. I don't think he's available in the auction league, but in the other league, the Roto Express League tonight, which I guess I shouldn't be announcing now, I'll be targeting Brandon Drury. I think he's going to be a very good player.
And he's going to have multi-position eligibility. Last year, he played all over the diamond, played six different positions, albeit just one at first base. But multi-position eligibility last year, only 24 years of age right now. He'll turn 25 during the season. But in any event, 16 homers last year, hit 282. Strikes out a bunch, but who doesn't these days? And Brandon Drury, a guy that you may be looking for, heating up and might break out with his ability to play every single day. Another guy we've talked about a whole bunch, Randall Grichuk, St. Louis Cardinals, as you stated, who probably said the same thing about Grichuk last year, but here he sits. He ended up with 24 homers anyway in a disappointing season. So your thoughts really on Grichuk? You feel like he's hot at this point.
I do. Listen, I've grabbed him in a couple of leagues already. I have him in the auction league. I have him in my home league. I'll take him again tonight if he's available. When you look at him last year, you know, I say this in the column, I know he disappointed people because at this point last year, Mike, if you would have asked me, we would have been saying the same exact things about him. And he disappointed somewhat. You know, somewhat. He came along in the second half. But if you look at his numbers, isolated power, stuff like that, he hit into some bad luck. His hard hit ball percentage was fine. He just hit the ball at people a lot. I don't think it's going to happen again 2 years in a row. You know, so I think that the home run numbers will be there. I don't know if he's going to hit 35. But anyway, I think he had 24 last year. Does 30 shock me? Not at all. I think Rizek's going to be just fine.
Yeah, and hit, you know, the batting average came down 36 points from the year. Obviously, he had a significant increase in plate appearances, but you know, over time, that can average out. Is he a 250 hitter? Is he a 275 hitter? I think that remains to be seen to some extent. He's still a young player, and as you said, trying to figure it out. When you hit 24 homers in a disappointing season, I think there's obviously a lot of room for optimism there. Brian Walton, who's a gentleman that we had on the program last Sunday and competed in the NL Tout Wars, he's a Cardinals beat writer. He writes for Masters Ball and CardinalNation.com. He drafted Grichuk in his draft. I think he got him in the $17 to $20 range. So he's in on Randall Grichuk. Another guy who can't argue. We talked about the Mets pitching staff a bunch yesterday. I was saying that people don't really talk about DeGrom enough. But a guy that I think could surprise people here with Steven Matz not being ready to go yet is Robert Gsellman. What did we think about when we talk about the New York Mets starting pitchers? We talk about Thor, and we talk about DeGrom being an ace, and we talk about Harvey and his risk factors this year and how Zach Wheeler is coming back, but it'll be on an innings limit. And then here you're left with a guy in Gsellman that's in the starting rotation to start the season, which I think some Mets fans are pretty excited about, and you seem to be as well.
Yeah, I thought about putting DeGrom in that list, but I thought that was too easy. And I think DeGrom is great. So I thought Gastelum was a better person to put in because, he's not DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey, Mats, Wheeler. He's not the name guy here. You know, he's sort of the guy where, oh, it's Gastelum. What's he going to do? Do we even know about him? He's got a heavy sinker, keeps the ball on the ground. He's not going to put up the strikeout totals that the other guys do. But they'll be respectable, just not the big numbers. He's not going to strike out a batter per inning, not even close. But pitches in the National League, weaker lineups, good. They're a good team. The wins should be there. I like Gastelum a lot, especially for where you can draft them.
By the way, the one underrated thing, well, I know that it's underrated. The one shocking thing when you look at the Mets starting pitchers is how big they are. Just physically, massive guys. Height. Gastelum is added another one to the list. 6'4", 205. You got DeGrom and Thor, and these other guys are huge. The Mets are put together a basketball team as their starting rotation.
I listen. The Mets, they do a great job of bringing up young pitchers. You mentioned all these guys. Remember, they traded Fulmer to Detroit in the Cespedes deal. So he was in their organization as well. The Mets know how to develop pitchers. Maybe they can't keep them healthy because they will suffer injuries, but they do know how to develop them.
Yeah. Between Noah, DeGrom, Harvey, Wheeler, Mats, Lugo, and Gastelum, I mean, they need every one of those guys, but they're all quality. So kudos to the Mets. We'll talk a little bit about who's not hot after the break. Mike and George back after this. We're back.
Back to disco.
Last couple of segments. Yeah, there we go. A little bit more from the disco 70s scene. George's favorite time. Time and music. Got a couple of more segments to go. And we're talking about George's article on rotoexperts.com. By the way, you can follow us today all day at FNTSY Radio. You can follow George at George Kurtz. Follow me at Mike Blewett. Feel free to hit us up with any questions. And you can hit up Mike Cardano at Mike Cardano if you want to just, I don't know, bash him about his team or encourage him about the chances that he took. Because I'm sure they'll all work out. Right, George?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We all know our fantasy always works out that way. Take as many chances as you possibly get. Mike pretty much did the anti-George draft. I'm about as conservative as you. I don't take very many risks. I'm a big believer that, when it comes to drafting, a draft generally doesn't win you a league, but it can lose you one. You know, what I mean by that is, it's when you draft to set you up. The moves you make during the year, trades, roster moves, and staying healthy is always a bonus. You know, and that's something that generally you can't control. That wins you leagues. Unfortunately for Mike, he may be in the draft to lose you a league.
So we're going to have some problems there, but we'll make up for it. I can appreciate the fact that he stated that it was he's playing it over the course of the season. We do think he took too many chances, but ultimately he's expecting that people are going to have to go after some guys through their using their fab budget, and he's kind of prepping for the entirety of the season. I just think at the top level, if he's trying to compete to win, what he did is going to be difficult to overcome. So in any event, I want to get back to your article on rotoexperts.com, who's hot or who's not. We went through the players that we feel are hot, players that are not. We mentioned Carlos Carrasco and the seriousness of what could be an injury. I mean, he got destroyed this spring. His ERA was over 10, I believe. So they're saying Cleveland keeps insisting there's nothing physically wrong. It's just a little bit of a rough March for him. But elbow rumors being out there ultimately you find him to be nearly untouchable in drafts at this stage, yes?
I would say untouchable. I mean, I would still draft him, and I'll draft him tonight. He's available in both leagues, so I definitely would draft him, but the value would have to be there. There's something, Mike said something very important, in regards to Zach Greinke, that, pitchers sometimes they don't care, and that's very true. Veteran pitchers don't care about spring training. They're just getting their work in. And I think that could apply to Greinke somewhat as far as his velocity. So I do agree with that. Carrasco's not quite in that case, though, where he could just breeze through spring training. He's not that established. So what is going on here? And these elbow injury rumors, they definitely concern me quite a bit here. And when I say getting your work in, a 10-point, whatever, was it 6.8 or 8.6 ERA is unsightly. That can't happen. I guess the good news is Cleveland truly doesn't believe this is an injury. There's anything structurally wrong with his elbow or his shoulder. So they don't think an injury is the problem here. Okay, that's good news, right? They are still scheduled to start him game 2 of the season. They would protect him if not. You know, the injury he suffered at the end of his season last year is when he got hit by a batted ball, broke his hand. So that's not it's not an elbow injury, not an arm injury. So I'm not worried about that. But still, what's going on? Why isn't he pitching well at all? You have to be concerned right now. But to answer your question, Mike, no, I wouldn't say I'm shying away from him. But now I could have considered him a starting pitcher two for my team easily. Now we're talking, he's doubled that. SP4, SP5, the value has to be there now. But he could be a boom or bust guy. Because let's face it, he could be a guy who will turn it on, you know, on Tuesday when he pitches, or Wednesday, whatever game two is for Cleveland. You know, and all of a sudden he's going to be great again. So maybe he is just one of those guys who's going to turn it on when the opening bell rings.
And another starting pitcher who has continued to plummet throughout draft seasons, and we understand draft season is basically coming to a close today and maybe a couple of days into the season, but David Price has consistently dropped off. Obviously, injuries are at the heart of this. People might have had some question marks about what he can do in Boston in year number two after having a really disappointing year number one in Boston, but ultimately we got elbow issues, and they're seeming encouraged because he's able to throw, although it's not off a mound, and et cetera, et cetera. You're saying he could be back late April, early May. Is that your expectation?
That's what we hope. You know, most of these, you just don't know. And remember, we don't know when they say, oh, he'll be back in 4 weeks. Well, does that mean he'll be back just from his injury, then has to get ramp up his baseball activity again? How long does that take? 2 weeks, 4 weeks? You know, is it longer for a pitcher than a hitter? Usually it is. A hitter may only need a couple of days, 4, 8, 12, 16, 20 at-bats. A pitcher might need 4 or 5 starts. Times that by 5 days, that's never 3 weeks there. So, you can't be sure of that either. So I assume with all these injuries, that it's pretty much mid to late May before we're really going to see them. And that's always a concern. Now, another point Cardano made, baseball's a long season. Losing the month of April is not really a huge thing. Obviously, it's not great, but it's not a huge thing. There are a lot of off days in April, too, so it's not a major thing. But now if we're going into May, now it's Memorial Day, now it's June, now we're talking a third of the season's gone. So the value may not be there as much either. What if he's one of these players to gets off to a slow start? That's another month. So am I tacking on another month on top of what he's missed? So I take that into account as well.
By the way, a story that just came out via RotoWire earlier this morning, just about an hour ago, just earlier, 14 minutes ago, it was updated. So Price will be on a 2 days on, 1 day off throwing plan, according to manager John Farrell. He added that with each 2 day throwing sequence, the hope is that Price will add some distance. We've seen that he's thrown between 75 and 90 feet on flat ground. So there's no timetable yet for the left-hander's return. As you said, unfortunately, at the end of April, it's probably still a hope as to what he's going to be able to do. It's going to be a slow build-up. I think this Red Sox, obviously, they're going to be in the mix trying to compete for a World Series title. So if they need to take a little extra time with Price, which is a really valuable commodity, they will.
Of course, they signed a $217 million contract. They're going to take it safe here. They're going to play it safe. And they probably don't need him to make the playoffs. I think they do need him to win the World Series. So I think they'll play it somewhat safe here. But that bottom line price is, we don't know when he's coming back. The Red Sox don't know when he's coming back. And once again, when he comes back, what's he going to be? Is he going to be with David Price of old? Or is he going to be a little bit of a new David Price? What have I mentioned with Tanaka? When he sprained that ligament or has that slight tear, it took him over a year to figure it out, how to pitch with it, and realize, hey, I can still let it loose. I'm okay. How long does it take Price to realize that? Even when he comes back, is he going to be just let it loose, hey, whatever happens, happens? Or is he going to be babying it a little bit? Maybe only throwing it at, 80% of what he can really do. You never know with these pitchers. Are they going to be thinking too much about the elbow and not about where that ball needs to be placed? So this is all going to concern me. Once again, Price, there is value at some point during his draft. But odds are, I think it was Joe Lano who mentioned that Price was drafted before Gausman and Dallas Keuchel. If I remember correctly, that's how it went, the order there. I would have taken Gausman before both those guys. Gausman's a sure thing. I know when he's pitching. Price, I have no idea. I think, once again, he could be great if he comes back in mid-May and is David Price. That's a complete bonus. But I also think that's wishful thinking. The odds of that happening don't seem to be very good.
No, especially based on what we just heard there. He's not... It's a throwing plan, which means they're getting him through some injuries, and we don't know, it's an elbow injury too, George. Like, we don't know. Like, is it going to be what Tanaka was, where he had a strain and he comes back, or is it going to be what, you know, just happened to Alex Reyes? It's got to be out there in your mind as something that could happen. So we'll continue to monitor that. One more guy before the break. Steven Matz, since we can touch on him very quickly, I think it's important that you note it in here. He's never thrown more than 137 innings at any level. So it's highly unlikely that he's going to break that streak this season with him being hurt now. And frankly, with the Mets having enough starting pitching available, like Matz, as you said yesterday, may not be a guy who ever is able to be a consistent starting pitcher. He may just be a long bullpen guy. Just to try to save his arm to extend his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. We all know he's a very good starting pitcher. He lives out in Spiffton, actually. He lived out by me. So I certainly wish the best for him. But, I mean, fantasy-wise, the numbers are all you need to see. He can't last a full season. He's already hurt now. What would make anyone think, let's say he's back in the Mets rotation April 21st, May 1st, whatever. What makes you think he's going to last the last 5 months and not get hurt again? His entire history says he can't do it. Okay, he will get hurt again. So what's his value? Really, what's his value for you? He starts May 1st, he gets hurt July 18th, August 1. We don't know when it's coming. We just know that odds are it is coming. So once again, there's value with him, yes. But I'm not dying for him. If I'm drafting tonight, I'm not looking to grab Matz. If he's available in round 27, okay, maybe. But other than that, he has to be a very late round grab for me because I just have severe doubts that this current injury is the only injury he's going to have all season long.
Yeah, 132 innings last year, gave up 129 hits. His whip was 1.21, basically, but had 129 strikeouts in those 132 innings, went 9-8 with a 3.4 ERA, George. So obviously some really positive numbers out of him.
I mean, I love the kid. He's got a great arm. You know, one of them, definitely a guy who could make a difference for your fantasy team and for the Mets. But I don't know if he's ever going to be able to throw 200 innings. I don't know if he can throw 160 innings. And I don't think the Mets know this either right now until he does it. And this doesn't seem like they're going to be the year where he does it. Because it already hurt. And I think the Mets will baby him somewhat, just like they're going to baby Wheeler and probably baby Harvey to try and sort of massage all these guys through the season. This is why the Mets are in such good shape that they have Gesellman, have Lugo, because they can afford to do this. They can skip starts liberally. And just plug one of these other guys in, and they'll be okay. You know, most teams can't afford to do this. The Mets can. So that's good news in some ways that they can really take care of these guys and do what they feel is best as far as them not suffering another injury. But everything in Matz's career, in his past, says he's a ticking time bomb. It's just a matter of time until he suffers another injury.
Yep, so George and I will talk a little bit more about his Who's Hot or Who's Not article after the break. Mike and George back for the last segment on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George here for another few minutes. And we'll talk a little bit more about George's players that are not hot. And then I want to get to George. I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to make you make some predictions for the MLB season. So we'll do the last couple of players on the list. You got Ian Desmond and JD Martinez, two guys that are injured right now. Martinez with the Liz Frank injury and Desmond with the broken hand. So ultimately, we're not going to see Desmond. The aggressive timeline was late April. I find that to be a little aggressive. And we have JD Martinez with a May return, seems to be best case scenario. So we might see JD Martinez on the sidelines for a really long time.
Yeah, I think once again, you want to be careful with injuries, especially these kinds of injuries. With Ian Desmond, I fret every time I hear about a hand, thumb, wrist injury with a baseball player. That's how they whip that bat around. That's where they get their strength and their power from. And now Desmond, broken hand already, didn't need surgery. I guess that's good news here. But just I don't want people to, you know, oh, he'll be back. And, you know, they said late April, and I agree with you. That's, once again, I think wishful thinking is my term for today. That's wishful thinking that Olsen's going to come back and be what they thought he was going to be. You know, so I'm pretty much shying away from Desmond once again unless the value is just out of this world. I'm not starting him. I'm not drafting him. JD Martinez, remember, it's a Liz Frank, it's a sprain. I think they'll bring him back before he's 100% healthy, but there's no place to hide him. They've got Victor Martinez and Miguel Cabrera. So first base and DH are gone. He's got to play the outfield. That's a lot of running, a lot of pressure, a lot of start stops on that foot. You know, he's also, when he's in the batter's box, he's got to push off that foot or land on it. I mean, not a good situation there either. I don't want either guy on my team. They're already hurt now. I have a hard time seeing either injury not hamper him throughout the season.
Agreed. So good stuff there from George. Go to rotoexperts.com, pick up the exclusive Edge package, enter promo code FREERADIO for a discount for your MLB exclusive Edge package, both now if you got a draft upcoming or throughout the course of the year. Good stuff in there. So, George, turning the page to the 2017 season, opening day just about 3 hours away, our Yankees facing the Tampa Bay Rays. So, first of all, I'm going to make you predict who do you got in the divisions in the American League. Who are your division winners?
All right, American League East, give me the Red Sox. I think they're the best overall team here with or without David Price. So great young talent. Farm system, if they want to go out and get another pitcher, if, let's say Price, they get bad news, eventually he's not going to pitch this year, they have the talent to go out and do so. So I'm going with Boston in the American League East. The Central, it's all about Cleveland. I think they win that division easy. I don't even think it's close. In the West, I think this is a little bit more interesting for me. I said it before, I think Houston, if they can acquire a top-notch starter, and I'm talking about Jose Quintana, I think they're a World Series contender. Without him, I think they just win the division.
And your wild card teams there are? I think you told me in the past you like both West teams.
I'm definitely going with Seattle. I think Seattle's a really good team. I am going with Texas for my second team. I think the Yankees, Toronto are close. Toronto would be the one team that I could see squeezing in over one of the West teams. But in the end, you know, you play Oakland, bad team. Los Angeles, I have, you know, God, who, Ricky Nolasco, just started there. How good can you be? That's a lot of games against those two teams. I think it gives them the edge over the teams in the American League East. But I'll go with Texas and Seattle, but Toronto really close there.
What about Baltimore? A team coming off of 89-win team
No pitching. But they got lucky to survive last year.
Yeah.
No starting pitching there at all.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going to say. What about the Mariners staff? I know we had a couple of question marks about them. Do you feel like they're going to be able to hold up? Hernandez, Iwakama, Paxton, Miranda, Gallardo.
Well, that's their problem, right? They're another team that can really needs another starter or Felix Hernandez to be the old Felix Hernandez, and that's probably not going to happen. So that's why it's hard. They'd be the one team that I could see Toronto getting over. You know, wouldn't it? if Seattle's pitching can't hold up, which maybe it can't. You know, maybe I'm wishful thinking here because there's Seattle and Toronto are sort of the same team. Heavy offenses. And Toronto does have a better starting staff, so maybe I'm taking the schedule too much into account here. But that's my big worry about Seattle. It's absolutely starting pitching.
Are you any reservations about the Rangers? I mean, obviously they got a lot of talent in that lineup, but any reservations about them taking a step back? I mean, if Hamels and Darvish get out there and do what they do, then they're not going to really have any issues with the starting rotation overall. But, you know, at 3-4-5, maybe we've got some question marks. We have some guys in there. Can they do what they were able to do last year with Odor and some of the other guys?
I think they're going to hit fine. Once again, the back end of that rotation is somewhat worrisome. And their bullpen's not too good either. Yeah, Sam Dyson, I was just really shocked. Or at least surprised. Maybe not shocked, but surprised that they didn't look to make an upgrade there. You know, at that close position there, all these other teams pretty much did. Yet Texas didn't, and Dyson was he was dicey at times last year, so I was surprised there.
Okay, so I'm gonna actually I'm gonna knock Texas out. We've talked up Seattle enough. I think I really like them. They do need help with the rotation, but we just talked about some other teams that need help too. I'll take a little bit of a chance. I'll go with Seattle and Toronto, but I'm with you. I'm with you on the three. We got to go through real quick. So give me your NL teams. We'll do AL MVP and Cy Youngs next week. But give me your NL division winners and wild cards.
All right, Nationals is too good all around here. I really like their team here. I think the Nationals just have to prove they can win it during the playoffs and do some damage there. In the Central, I'm going with the Cincinnati. No, I'm not going with the Reds. Give me the Cubs. I think the Cubs are the best team in baseball, so no shock once again there that I'll go with the Cubbies. The West, I think, is close. Team of the Dodgers and the Giants there. I think there's a two-team battle there. Give me the Dodgers, though, in the end, just a little deeper than the Giants.
And your wild card teams are the, I assume the Mets are going to be one of your wild card teams?
Yes, going with the Mets. I think the Mets are a pretty good team. I love the pitching staff here, even though they all get hurt, but they're so deep, and the other teams just don't have that. I think they have enough offense to get by. I think they've made a cluster F of their outfield situation. As I said, Conforto should be starting out there, no doubt, but yet he might get sent down when Lagares is healthy. Crazy there. So I think they've made some mistakes. Their defense is deplorable, but the pitching staff will make up for that. Mets get the one wild card. And the Giants get the other wild card. Wouldn't shock you if the Giants win that division and the Dodgers get the wild card, but that's how I think it's going to go. Sorry, St. Louis. Sorry, Pittsburgh.
I'm going to go with you 5-5. I agree all the way across the board. I'll take the Dodgers for the division winner there. I'm going to take the Cubs going to the World Series. I'm struggling in the American League, but I feel like Houston's going to make that move. I'll take a shot here with the Astros playing the Cubs, and the Cubs going for a repeat. Your thoughts there?
If the Astros make that move, they get that starter, then it's the Astros. If David Price comes back and he's healthy from mid-May on or June on, then it's Boston. But definitely on the Cubs.
Okay. Thanks, folks. That's it. There's our calls. They were terrible in the NFL. We hope they're a little bit better in MLB. Mike and George, that's 3 hours up and 3 hours down. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy opening day. We'll talk to you next week.